Hi everybody, Steve Savitsky here, and today we have Baruch Sturman. Baruch actually lives in Efrat, is a physicist, a high-tech person doing research, but both he and his wife wrote a very interesting book called The Rarest, R-A-R-E-S-T, Blue. Baruch, how are you today?
Hi, how are you?
Very, very good. Well, you know that in the winter edition of the Jewish Action 2013, there's a review of your book called The Rarest Blue, which is about the mitzvah of Techeles, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But what prompted you to write this book at this time?
Well, I've been involved in Techeles research for over 20 years, and we talk about it in the book, how exactly I got involved in it. It was by accident, not because of any of my training as a scientist, but rather because I ended up taking a gym course that taught me how to scuba dive at Columbia. And funny how things work out, but that actually happened to be one of the most religiously significant events in my life. I got involved in Techeles, and together with some of my buddies from New Jersey who have made Aliyah with us, and Rabbi Tevger, we founded an organization that not only researches and tries to find out about Techeles, but actually produces the strings, and maybe 200,000 people are probably wearing Techeles today, based on the organization's production and what we've worked on.
Right. So I mean, I've been there to the factory, quote unquote, and have watched personally how you do that. And there's no question that there's definitely a more of an awareness today. People know about it. First, let's go back to the basics, so some of the people probably don't know. So there is a mitzvah, of course, in the Torah for someone to wear tzitzis if they have a four-cornered garment, and that it says there should be a strand of techeles at the corner, and because of that, you remember all the mitzvahs of Hashem and so on. So techeles is basically added on to the tzitzis when they're made, correct? One blue string to basically remind you of the sea and the sky and so on and so forth, right?
Exactly right. Now, techeles is actually the core of the mitzvah of tzitzit. Okay, so if you look at the way the psukim present the mitzvah tzitzit, it says the reason for tzitzit, you will look at them. That's a mistranslation. You will look at them and remember all of the mitzvot. The actual translation is you will look at it, or item oto, and oto is singular masculine. So the only thing that it can be referring to in the pasuk is the petil techeles, is the string of techeles. So the fundamental core reasoning behind wearing tzitzit at all is to wear this techeles. And unfortunately, that was lost, that which was so important and really fundamental was lost to us, and it's been at least 1,300 years that no one has worn techeles.
I've always wondered about this myself. I mean, why was it lost? I mean, you have Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, but, here you had, for thousands of years, people were wearing tzitzit that had techeles, and all of a sudden it's lost. And in fact, when it's lost to everybody. I mean, it's not like you see, a certain percentage of people still kept it, unless maybe I'm wrong. It was lost and then rediscovered, right?
Yes. Well, so absolutely. In fact, part of the problem, the problem started because techeles was not only for Jews. It was something that was fabulously expensive and desirable for the entire ancient world, and especially the ancient Near East in the Mediterranean. It was worth up to 20 times its weight in gold, and the wool that was dyed with this blue, beautiful blue. And because of that, it came under imperial control. Everybody wanted it. The Midrashim talk about how Nebuchadnezzar left only those techeles dyers. That's all he left in Israel after he destroyed Eretz Israel, and so on through the Persian period, through the Greek period, through the Roman period. Everybody who came to Israel, one of the most important things in this area was the techeles industry. The techeles industry and its cousin Argaman, purple. These two things were fabulously important, luxurious items. Once they came under imperial control, it was taken really pretty much out of the Jews' hands. They didn't have control over techeles anymore. And so during the Arab conquest in around the year 624, when all of the Roman Empire was destroyed, the dye houses that were associated with Rome and all of the dyes that were under imperial control were also lost. And so Trelet was destroyed along with the Arab conquest all the way up the Mediterranean.
And then do you read, are there, like, you know, sources that talk about it over the years? I mean, I know that in the article that I read and, you know, some of the research I've done, that it was just probably just about 120 years ago that an attempt was made to kind of revive the mitzvah with Rav Henoch Leiner, the Radzina Rav. And but are there, like, Mefarshim, or are there people who talk about it, saying we long for it, where is it, how could we reinstitute it or not?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, there are both halachic and I would say Hasidic traditions. You know, halachic traditions are that you have Shilas and Shuvos that speak about how it could very, very easily be that Trelet could be one day revealed, as long as we could find the actual source of it. And therefore, certain halachos in Tzitzis that apply only to when Trelet is around are still in force today. For example, we won't wear a linen beged, right? Because linen and wool would make shatnez, and the strings of the tzitzis have to be wool when you have trelas. So even though that doesn't apply today, because, or at least it didn't apply for many hundreds of years when there was no trelas, but the halacha kept it, because at any point trelet could be coming back, and we don't want to get confused. And of course, in terms of Hasidic literature, Rav Nachman of Breslov had a beautiful tefillah that he would say every single day as he put on his talit, how Trelet is lost and the chilazon is gone, but may one day we merit the fact that as he says, let us return to our land, let us rebuild Jerusalem, and let us find the chilazon, the ancient sea creature that was lost, and now and then let us have Trelet again. And this tradition of Breslov, that before Mashiach comes, Trelet will be rediscovered, is what prompted them to put on the Trelet of the Radzina Rebbe, as you mentioned, in 1889. He discovered what he felt was Trelet, and it prompts the Breslov Hasidim to have a very, very strong attachment to Trelet in general, and there are quite a number of Breslov Hasidim that wear our Trelet today, and that's all part of it.
Okay, so now you've come to the conclusion, based upon your research, that you know exactly where the chilazon, or what it is, and was it the same conclusion that the Radzina Rav came up with in 1889, or was it different?
No. Well, so let me go back, because Actually the first modern person to deal with this, I call modern, let's say within the last 100, 150 years, was actually the Tiferes Yisrael, Rav Yisrael Lifshitz, who knew about secular research that claimed that there was a snail, a purpurish snek, a purple snail, and that's what these Gesenius, for example, secular scholars who had done translations of the Torah into German and into Latin, and they felt that this purple snail was the source of the Trelet. The Tiferes Yisrael says categorically, Trelet has to be sky blue, and therefore we reject that snail which only gave purple. The Radzina Rebbe knew about that, and the Radzina Rebbe felt that, again, it had to be sky blue, rejected the snail, and went off to try and find what the actual chilazon, this actual sea creature, was, and came up with his conclusions. Very, very fascinating story. A few years later, in 1913, okay, the Radzina Rebbe was in 1889. He died in 1891. In 1913, Rabbi Isaac Halevi Herzog, Rabbi Yitzchak Halevi Herzog, wrote a doctorate. And there he discussed Radzina Trelet and rejected it completely. And then he went back to the question of, could it be this purple snail, the Murex trunculus, which it's called in its Latin name. And he again rejected it because, as far as he knew, the snail could only produce a purple dye. And Rav Herzog felt, as did basically all of these modern researchers who looked at it from the halachic standpoint, needed a sky blue color, a beautiful blue color, and that's what was required. And as long as the snail, even though there were all kinds of other reasons from the archaeological evidence, the terms that are used and historical evidence, all kinds of other evidence that pointed at this snail. From Herzog maintained that even though all archaeologists, historians, chemists, and whatnot believe that this Murex trunculus was the source of the trelet, if it could only produce a purple dye, then we have to, Jews, halachic Jews, have to reject that as the source of the chilazon, and there it stood. Rav Herzog died in 1959, never being able to reconcile the problem that science and history had, which was that they felt that this was the correct snail, with halacha that felt that the snail had to produce a sky blue dye instead of a purple dye.
Okay, but nobody really knows the color of what the chilazon is. I mean, right? I mean, it could be purplish. It could be blue. I mean, right? It doesn't have to be exactly. You know, you look at the sea. I mean, if the idea is to look at the ocean, I mean, you know how people also how I always love when people go on vacations. We ask when they go to the Caribbean, and they ask, "Oh, how was the ocean? Oh, it's gorgeous. It's greenish." Really? Oh, wow, it's not blue? No, it's like a greenish
that's
blue.
That's exactly true. And in fact, you know, I would call it confusion among the sources, because you have Rashi, who himself contradicts himself. At one point, Rashi says that the trelet is yarok, it's green. And in another place, he says it's mashchir in le'et erev, it's very dark blue as the sky gets dark. And you have people who claim along the way that it was purple. But nonetheless, the tradition that was adopted by the Radziner and by Rev Herzog is the trelet has to be a sky blue. And this, of course, was the major challenge. And I hope that that your listeners won't think that that's the end of the story.
Okay.
Because there was something that happened 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago, that answered this riddle. The dilemma that Rav Herzog had and unfortunately was never able to be zochet to solve, that riddle was eventually solved by accident around the year 1985.
Okay, what happened?
And then, Professor Otto Elsner, researching at the Shenkar College of Fibers in Herzliya, was doing his research into these ancient snail dyeing techniques. And again, let's remember that these were very, very important just from a historical standpoint. How exactly did the ancients do this? With the basis of the commodities of the economy in the ancient world. So people were very, very interested in what exactly was going on with these snails. And while he was doing his research into the dyeing, he found, again, completely by accident, that on sunny days, he actually was able to produce a beautiful sky blue color. On cloudy days, or when he covered the dye at a certain point in the process, he did get the purple that Rav Herzog knew about and that the Radziner had known about and that the Tiferet Yisrael had known about.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to sunny days, by exposing it to the ultraviolet rays of the sun, he was actually able to get a beautiful, beautiful sky blue, exactly the color that you would have imagined that is Domele Rakia, that looks like the sky in the beautiful Mediterranean sky in the middle of the day, as the Rambam put it so beautifully. So that was the basis. Once that discovery was made, there was really nothing standing in the way now of unequivocally identifying the Murex trunculus snail as the chilazon and the dye that came out of it as the basis for the trelet that was used since the time of Moshe Rabbeinu.
Okay, and now this is what you use, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And where do you find it, by the way?
So they're all over the Mediterranean. Originally, we did our initial research by taking some snails out of the ocean in out of the Mediterranean in Israel. But we kind of chased this all over the Mediterranean. We found some suppliers in Greece and then in Spain. And right now we get them from a group of fishermen along the coast of the Adriatic off of Croatia. And we need quite a bit of snails. This is not...
I was going to ask you, how many snails equals a pair of tzitzis?
anywhere from 50 to 60 snails.
Really?
And now you imagine that... Baruch Hashem, we are producing now over 1,000 sets a month. So in order to replenish our dye stock this year to make sure that we had enough for the next, let's say, 18 months, we needed about 500,000 snails that had to be collected this summer.
Mm. Wow, that's some task. That is amazing. Where exactly, I went to visit, where exactly is the factory again?
The factory is in Kfar Adumim. It's right outside of Yerushalayim on the way down to Yam HaMelach. A humble factory, but just like the snail is a humble little snail that produces such a beautiful dye, our factory is a humble factory that also produces beautiful, beautiful strings.
Okay, now in the article that's written, actually, because we review, you know, the book in Jewish Action, and it's reviewed by Rabbi Alfred Cohn, who's a Rav, a distinguished Rav, and also, you know, I was a teacher for many, many years, and he has a lot of wonderful things to say about the book, and enjoyed it, and recommends it. But he mentions that the Gemara portrays the Chilazon as a creature, and he puts, that needs to be hunted. Okay, and now he says, I personally saw the alleged Chilazon resting quietly on the wall of the tank, from which it would not move for a very long time. There would be absolutely no need to trap the Murex. It hardly seemed to necessitate hunting. Thus, the halachic discussion might well negate the scientific conclusions that identify this as the Chilazon.
Actually, I think hunting is the wrong word. Trapping is the better word, and it's called sad. And there is, of course, this very interesting discussion within the Gemara. Sad chilazon v'hapotso, the Gemara says in Gemara Shabbat. So chilazon has to be trapped, and that trapping has to be something which is considered trapping as far as Hilchot Shabbat, as far as the laws of Shabbat are concerned. So this issue, I think, has been dealt with extensively by a colleague of mine, Rabbi Moise Navon, and he has an article on the whole thing. What the bottom line is as follows. First of all, it's clear from other sources, and we won't go into them, that Rashi certainly holds that tzad applies to snails, and he says that explicitly. But the real issue is this. If you're going to take, and the way we catch these snails today is exactly the same way that they caught these snails back in the days of Pliny the Elder and Aristotle, who actually describe exactly what we do today. You take a basket, you bait it with live fish, drop it with lines down to the bottom of the ocean, maybe 10, 15 meters deep, and then you come back a few days later, and when you pick up these baskets, they're filled with the snails that have gone to eat the fish. Now that, baiting baskets and catching something with a basket is absolutely something that was done, that would have been categorized as tzad, as trapping, according to anybody and any view in the halacha. I think that the problem comes about because in our modern world, where you have things like scuba diving or even snorkeling, and we're used to, you know, jumping into the ocean, and we look for things, and we pick up rocks, and we pick up snails. That didn't happen in the old days, and certainly that was not the way to fish 500,000 snails. So even if you could pick up a snail that was, you know, close to the ocean, that's not what the Gemara is talking about when it says Hatzad Chilazon. It's talking about an industry that's going out there and baiting traps and picking them up. And that, according to every view, would be Asur on Shabbat, certainly, and would be tzad. So I think that that's an issue that can be addressed.
Okay, then he also addresses the fact that nobody really knows the color of what it's supposed to be. It's debated, of course, in the Gemara about what color it's supposed to be, bright sky blue and so on and so forth. And that has to be, and he says, these issues debated by medieval rabbis of Rishonim.
Absolutely.
Which
and,
would be four number...
I would say that the Gemara and Chazal know very well how to tell us when something is what we call ma'akev, when certain things within the characteristic of a halacha and certainly within tchelet, certain things you need, and if you don't have them, it's absolutely no good. So, for example, a synthetic dye or a plant dye, even if it gave you exactly the same color and characteristics of the tchelet, like there is such a thing, kalai ilan, it was a fraudulent dye in the times of the Gemara, that was not acceptable, and Chazal know very well how to tell us that. The fact that they don't tell us the exact color is probably an indication that they didn't care. you should try your best to get a blue color out of it, but if it comes out a little darker, a little bit lighter, or a little bit more purple, a little bit less purple, that probably didn't make a difference to them. And I always say that Tchelet is like Tchelet. You know what you're putting into it, but every time it comes out a little bit differently.
Right.
And that's certainly what happens in our
Right, and I think that people are going to look, and besides the fact that, I mean, the color may be exactly what the color is supposed to be, but I could see it different than you. Even though the color could be absolutely perfect, so he kind of mentions that in his book, and he said in his review, and he says, and it's really not the final. This is not the final say, because the fact that you have now, you know, concluded that you've come up with the right answer. Who knows what's going to happen down the road? One final question. So, how widely is it accepted? Is it a particular group of people within the Orthodox Jewish world that now accepts the Tchelet and uses it, or is it widespread across many different segments of the Jewish population?
It is widespread across every possible segment of the Jewish population, from the least religious and least affiliated to the most Orthodox and the most Haredi. That having been said, of course, there are certain populations that have adopted it a little bit more, a little bit less. But we have people that are learning in Mir that are wearing our Tchelet. Russia yeshivos in America and in Israel, Magide shiurim in Hasidic places and in Hasidic base medrashim, and just average people who have studied the topic and feel that this is something that they feel comfortable doing, even though again it's a very hard step for many religious Jews to, you know, they kind of feel they're forsaking their tradition by putting on tchelet onto their white tzitzis and onto their talit. This is what their fathers and their grandfathers, this is what their rabbeim and their teachers have done for so many generations. It's a hard emotional step to break and make that change, and it's something that we of course understand. And again, there are rabbanim who say that you can put on tchelet. There are rabbanim who say you must put on tchelet. There are rabbanim who say that you don't have to put on tchelet. And there are even some rabbanim here and there who say that you should not put on tchelet. So I think that it's something that definitely needs to be explored with everybody's, each and every person's teacher.
Well, listen, thank you. You've certainly enlightened our readers. And so I tell them to look forward to seeing the review by Rabbi Alfred Cohen. The book is called The Rarest Blue, and it's written by Baruch Sturman and his wife, Judith Talbeth Sturman. And we appreciate your being on the program. Thank you so much. Okay, have a wonderful day.